Hello and welcome to this Harmony and Health podcast. I'm Julia Outlaw and part of a team looking at ancient wisdom and modern disciplines and how we can learn practical ways to improve our own health and well-being. And today's podcast is about food and well-being, food and spices and well-being. And I'm joined by two wonderful women, both very passionate about food. First, Dr. Eleni Tsiompanu, part of the Harmony and Health team, who is a palliative care consultant and also an Ayurvedic practitioner and very interested in food and well-being. Hello, Eleni.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And also, very excitingly, we are joined by Natasha McCullough, otherwise known as the Dancing Chef. Welcome, Natasha.
Thank you. It's lovely to be with you.
Now, Natasha, you've had a very interesting life spanning many different careers, even in this world where people chop and change. I think this is quite unique, your career history. So you were a professional ballerina for 30 years.
Yes, I was.
An incredible background. And then moved into cooking, sort of graduated into cooking and becoming a chef and doing catering. And also now an author of two wonderful books and another one on the way. So quite a unique history, really, and a lot of interesting things that we can draw from moving on between those careers. So we'd love to hear a bit about that and a bit more about food and spice and everything that you find interesting. But maybe I can start by asking with food, what's your go-to food for, to make you feel good?
Oh my goodness. I could write a book on that. Go-to food. Because it depends on the season, the weather, time of day. But I tend to describe my go-to food as a snack or a dish that's full of flavor and not too sweet. And also textures. I think they're very satisfying, having a combination of textures. I call them crunchy, creamy, and fleshy. Makes a perfectly formed dish or meal. It's a bit harder with a snack, but it could be simple. It could be complex. There was a dish that I had the other night that I just absolutely, a dear, dear friend of mine made. It was a simple dish. It was made with torn bread that was toasted in the bottom of a pan with a bit of extra virgin olive oil and lovely flakes of fresh garlic, and then chopped fresh tomatoes. And it was sprinkled with lemon juice, and it was grilled in the oven, topped with additional breadcrumbs, bread chunks, and grilled so it was crunchy. And then you had the richness and how a fresh tomato, when it's just warm, bubbly warm, it just has that lovely sensation in the mouth of acidity and sweetness. And I couldn't stop eating it. My plate was half full of this incredible dish. It was topped with fresh chopped parsley and fresh basil. And I just, that was comfort to me.
So everyone listening, certainly me, is now salivating and very hungry. But that sounds delicious. So say it again. So it's the crunchy, the fleshy, and the...
And it didn't have a... Well, the creamy component would be the olive oil, because it was drizzled with olive oil and then it was finished with olive oil on the top. This beautiful olive oil that she got from Spain that she's absolutely obsessed with, and I am now too.
Ingredients really making a difference.
Mine is similar as well. I think mine would be a nice slice of bread with olive oil, oregano, and feta cheese, or if I don't have feta cheese, good olives that I usually bring from Greece that are from this specific island, Thassos, where they are like crinkly and big olives, and they're very good. Actually, they are the best prebiotic olives that you can have. So that would be my best food. And it actually brings to memory when my mom, when we were young, my mom would often give us bread and cheese as a snack. It was an easy food. And I know, Natasha, we talked about memories and how food is related to memories. And it's interesting how we both got into the combination of different textures and oregano. Did you mention oregano as well, sprinkled with some dried oregano?
Oh, sounds heavenly.
It does. It's so universal, isn't it? Like food and eating, but then it's not everybody who sort of feels, I guess, so passionately about it and wants to, you know, devote their career to it or the years of practice or formulating new recipes. And I mean, what do you think sort of really attracted you to it, Natasha?
It was a combination of things. I have to credit my mother, who didn't know how to boil water when she married my father before we all came along, four of us. And she used to watch Julia Child on television and got her books and just got stuck into it and made these magnificent meals. Some were, I must admit, inedible, as children can condemn a dish to the rubbish bin. But some were magnificent. And she, being an artist, used to create these fantastical platings and tables filled with really delicious and healthful food. And so that got me excited about food. And then the other part about it is, starting as a dancer in ballet, there's, of course, the whole body image, and there are issues with food and yes, overthinking it and what can I eat and how many calories. And so it became an obsession through my dance career. Yes. I love to make food and give it away. So it was the process of being involved with food. And then I would give it away. So the segue from being a ballerina to a chef was quite logical. Both are artistic, yes, creative, and both are performance art. You give a performance on the stage, or you bring a dish to the table for the audience to enjoy, and all that's left is the memory. And it's also, both careers are low paying, hours on your feet. And there's a lot of ballet that goes on in a kitchen, shuffling past people, and it's choreographed, and I loved it.
Amazing, yeah, dancing around the kitchen, and both need a lot of practice, really, a lot of dedication,
a lot of discipline and practice and concentration. Yeah, just completely different. Learning a ballet combination versus learning a salad dressing combination.
And is it the combination that you enjoy, the fact that it is creative, but you also need the sort of recipes and the skill and the science, and that those two come together? Or are you more fond of one or the other?
I do both. I would say savory food tends to be taste and trial and not a specific recipe as much as pastry. Pastry has incredible structure. You cannot vary ingredients as much as you can in a savory dish.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say, Lainey? Would you view cooking as an art or a science?
Yes, both, actually. Food is medicine, cooking is medicine. And those who know how to cook well can influence other people's health. My interest in cooking was not because I'm a doctor, but because I watched my mother cook and I learned through her, and I enjoyed doing it. And I find it quite a, like Natasha said, quite a creative and an art. But I've also found out that it's science, that it can make a difference on how healthy we are, how we feel, how happy we feel, how heavy. And it's also quite important in terms of varying what you eat according to the time of the year, the time of the day. So there's so much to think. There's so much possibilities on influencing someone's well-being negatively or positively. So it is both.
Yes. And as you're talking, it's, you know, it's not something you could sort of ignore because you need to eat every day. So if it is a hobby or an interest, then it can keep coming and it's part of your life, I imagine.
You need to eat from possibly until the day you die, possibly, yes. So we all have a reason to learn what's good and what's bad for us and what makes us happy and what not.
Now I want to hear some more about the specific types of food or recipes and spices, particularly, you know, your second book, Natasha, Spice Health Food Heroes. And I know you're both very interested in spice and the health benefits. I keep hearing little snippets of things and thinking, really, does that do that? And there's all this of knowledge there that I know you're both aware of. But tell us something about, well, what's your one of your favorite spices, Natasha?
Can I have a few? The project learning the study of spices that I did, the research I did for this book, it's opened a whole new world. And favorite spices, turmeric, of course, the master spice, I call it, is such a healthful and exciting spice. It can be used in so many things. It can be included in dishes that you don't necessarily taste the turmeric, which can be rather earthy flavored. But it has the health benefits that absolutely I'm speechless with all of the benefits that turmeric has. And I will often meet someone in conversation and I'll say, I've done this book, or they'll ask me about something. And I talk about turmeric. Oh yeah, I take turmeric. I have it capsules that I take every day. I said, but do you add black pepper to it? Why? Black pepper contains piperine, which is, it helps with the absorption of the turmeric. And also, it's turmeric is fat soluble, so you have to include a little bit of fat, oil, what have you, within that time frame of taking the turmeric for the absorption. And I know that Dr. Laney is an expert on this.
Yes, it's how you make a curry, really. You use fat, you put turmeric, and you put pepper as well as other things.
Yes, the holy trinity of spice.
I'm glad you mentioned the capsules thing, because I wanted to ask that, because you can buy just turmeric to put a teaspoon, just take it, and turmeric lattes are very fashionable at the moment, and... Well, how do you feel about that? Do you think that's as health-giving as adding it to a dish?
I would say it's probably not enough turmeric. I don't know those exact recipes. I have a tisane in the book, which includes turmeric and cinnamon, and it's finished with, and the peppercorns are in there, and it's finished with some coconut milk. So it's a latte. And I suppose that the turmeric lattes that one has, that you order from a shop, they, of course, the latte, you've got the fat in it, but not necessarily the pepper. And I now look at people who go buy those turmeric shots that you can get in a health food store, and they don't have any fat in them. They're just turmeric and ginger. And so I think that's a waste of money.
Yes. And so I'd heard that turmeric was anti-inflammatory. Is that right? What are the other benefits that we may not know about?
Dr. Laney can say more exacting, but I know it's very helpful to the digestive system. It's great for the immune system.
Yes, it also is very good as a painkiller. So lots of athletes, and there are scientific studies that say it's good as a painkiller. But it can be quite strong for the stomach. So it's actually better if you have it with food, not on an empty stomach. And if you have it, as Natasha said, with pepper and fat, these ingredients increase the absorption of turmeric. So you don't need to have as much as a big quantity of it. So as always, it's better if you have things in their natural form within a food rather than supplements. But sometimes when there is a crisis and you have an inflammation and you are in pain, then those supplements can be helpful.
I also read that there is curcumin, which is the active part of turmeric, is added to acetaminophen, Tylenol, we call it in the U.S., that they've now included curcumin in Tylenol, paracetamol. Yes.
Yeah. How interesting.
Extraordinary.
What about other ones that people may sort of use and not know their benefits so much, maybe? Cinnamon, for example.
Cinnamon is an anticoagulant, which is extraordinary. If you were to cut yourself or someone at a kitchen accident, grab the powdered cinnamon and just pack it on the blood, and it just coagulates, it stops the bleeding immediately.
Wow.
And it's an antiseptic as well. So it gives you time to get to A&E.
I love cinnamon.
Yeah, sprinkle on everything.
Yes, we sprinkle it on everything. And it's very good to regulate the blood sugar and regulate your cholesterol. And it gives a sweet taste into the food. It's one of my favorite spices.
I often tell people to sprinkle some cinnamon on your morning coffee or morning latte, because you don't need a whole lot to give the benefit for lowering the blood sugar, balancing the blood sugar. It's a powerhouse of a spice, as are so many of them, and it tastes delicious.
It does. And I heard it was the friendly spice, cinnamon. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because you eat it with friends or you put it on cakes, but maybe it makes you feel good and then your relationship with others improves. I don't know.
It can do, actually. Ah. I think there's three spices that are especially good to boost your sense of happiness. They make you happy. And it's this Saint Hildegard of Bingen who talked about it many centuries ago. It's cinnamon, cardamom, and nutmeg. These three spices. And then, of course, if a bit of sugar makes you happy, a bit of fat gives you a nice taste. So if you make biscuits with these spices, then it's the best.
And maybe add a pinch of black pepper.
Yeah.
Ground pepper into. I love having a little bit of heat with sweet things. It just helps the salivary glands do their job.
Yes. And you, Natasha, your books are full of sort of unusual combinations of things. Your first book, Vanilla, mostly sort of using it in savory way.
Yes.
And all these different combinations. How do you think that evolved, or why do you like that?
I really enjoyed researching vanilla and taking it beyond a baking book and tasting it, discovering different combinations that actually work, and surprising readers and people that would come to my lectures and classes with a little experiment that I tried about how the brain, how our memory is so powerful, it kind of counteracts what the reality is of at the moment. So simply put, I would talk to everybody and say, what is your vanilla memory, your first vanilla memory, which it tends to be a childhood memory. And 90% of people said vanilla ice cream. One said grandma's kitchen, which I thought was very cool. And then I would give them a little sample of vanilla sugar and say, think of that memory and taste this. I didn't tell them what it was. And of course, it's vanilla sugar. I said, okay, hold on to that memory of vanilla ice cream or sugar cookies sprinkled with vanilla and close your eyes and taste this. And they tasted it and went, oh my goodness. One woman just couldn't handle the memory and the fact that this was vanilla salt. Because in truth, vanilla is woody, bitter, very bitter. It's inedible. If you've ever been tempted to take a swig of vanilla extract, you will understand, or if you've already done that, you'll understand the reaction. So I've taken that further and used vanilla in savory applications. It works really well with caramelized onions, garlic, believe it or not, even tomatoes. It's great with beets and sweet potato. It just enhances, it enriches the flavor profile of the dish, which I find very exciting. And I think that's one of the keys of making a good dish, is to just add a little bit of an additional ingredient.
Yes.
To just take it over the top.
Can you give us a little example? So, you know, lunch tomorrow, I want to include some vanilla. What would I cook?
Oh, gosh. I'm on a bit of a tomato binge, so I apologize. But I would say this incredible tomato soup made with fresh tomatoes, vanilla. I use chicken stock and a bit of cream and a bit of caramelized garlic. And it is absolutely delicious. Finish it with a little bit of crispy shallots on the top. So you're combining onions and vanilla and tomatoes, things that don't necessarily go together, but make the most comforting, delicious, fragrant dish.
That sounds yummy.
Natasha, to ask you something, you must find the most amazing ingredients traveling around the world because you're between three different, quite far apart places. Like you come to England, to London, you go to Los Angeles, then you go to New Zealand. And in all these places, you must have found amazing farmers and amazing foods and taste the best. Tell us about it. It's quite incredible, really.
It is. I feel very grateful and excited, passionate about each of the places. I would say number one is eat seasonally and find the farmer's market. The blueberries right now, I'm currently obsessed with blueberries. To have them fresh from the farmer's market in season and only eat in season. And there's different varieties of these fruits and vegetables available. And I like to taste them and then say, how is this going to pair with another ingredient or a component, say a soup or a stew or just a plated dish? Use those. I would say in New Zealand, the potatoes are just can't be beat, and the sweet potatoes, and utilizing those in a dish. I do a sweet potato casserole with layered with caramelized onions and a little vanilla and a local cheeses you can't find anywhere else. The dairy products in New Zealand taste very different because everything is grass-fed, because it's so green. There's so much grass. They don't eat, they're not grain-fed. And so that the butter, the milk, the sour cream, the dairy products have this extraordinary flavor to them, just kind of a fresher flavor to them than in other places. So in England, the fresh herbs, the fresh lettuces, the cherries, oh my God, the cherries, to utilize those, to taste flavor profile and then create something that really celebrates the fruit, the vegetable, the herb is what makes you want to let your ingredients sing and not bathe them in salt and sugar, but use those spices and use the salt and the sugar just to enhance the flavor, such as the beautiful English strawberries, the Campy Beef, the little tiny full of flavor strawberries from Scotland and the raspberries from Scotland. Just simply cut up a bit of sugar just to sweeten them slightly if they need it, but add a little pinch of salt, believe it or not, because it makes the strawberry taste more like a strawberry. It's very surprising. I learned that from a chef, Nancy Silverton, years and years ago, who's a very well-known American chef. And I have used it ever since. It's extraordinary.
Is there a specific type of salt that you use, Natasha?
Yes. That's another book that I have done the recipes for. As a COVID project, during COVID time, I worked with a local New Zealand salt maker who uses no energy whatsoever, carries stainless steel buckets into the ocean. It's all been tested for purity. This beautiful bay in the north, far north of New Zealand. And he dries the salt with using solar panels. And it's just gorgeous flake salt from Taipa Bay. And I'll use that. I also love Maldon, classic Maldon sea salt, and Fleur de Sel from France. So wherever I go, I use the local salt, as we all should do.
It makes such a difference, salt. I use Halon Mon, which is from North Wales, which is where I'm from. And I think just because I've started using it now in the big crystals, now I can't use other ones, at least when I'm here, just because it does make everything taste nicer, just a few sprinkles of that on top.
Absolutely, it does. And as local as you can, you know, support the local salt makers as we support our fruit and veggie people. And then another note about salt, which not everybody knows, is that table salt, use it to clean the dishes, clean the floor. As I say, with imitation vanilla, same reason. With salt, the fine salt, table salt, it contains anti-caking and free-flowing additions to the salt, which cancels out the benefits of what salt is. And also, I've read some studies that is what increases blood pressure, is this manufactured salt. So whether it's sea salt or it's mine salt like Himalayan, make sure that it's pure salt and that it only says salt on the ingredients, because there are, I know in the UK, there is a salt maker who says it's pure sea salt on the cover, but you turn it around and it includes the anti-caking ingredients. So that's a big warning. Just use pure salt.
So interesting as you speak, Natasha, and you were naming all these ingredients, but it wasn't just the list of ingredients. I'm sure the listeners can hear this as well, but you could almost taste them as you said them, and that they were really, each one had its own identity and its own self that you could then choreograph into a dish. And it's quite unique to think about it in that way, I think, and very interesting. I wanted to ask about different health benefits from food, and we've mentioned loads already, but one thing at the moment is people's attention span and memory. And I know after COVID, a lot of brain fog can come with a lot of diseases as well. Do you have anything you'd recommend for that?
Yes, rosemary.
Rosemary.
Rosemary is being studied for diseases of the brain, for the memory. I call it the remembrance spice. And I read a fascinating study about testing college students who were cramming, as one does, for exams. And they took one group that they just did whatever they were doing, whatever their techniques were for studying, probably copious amounts of coffee. And then another group, they used rosemary. And I believe they did it as a scent. the scent of fresh rosemary in the room. And the rosemary infused students did better on exams because it helped focus and retain what they were studying. Studies continue, but fascinating. So I came up with a pre-exam cramming recipe that can be made very easily with ingredients that you would have at home, which is 1.5 teaspoons of dried rosemary or a tablespoon of fresh chopped rosemary needles, leaves, 2 teaspoons of cocoa powder, just plain cocoa powder, and 1 cup of boiling water. And you let it all steep, you let the rosemary steep for 10 minutes or so in the cocoa powder. And then you can add a bit of orange zest or a squeeze of orange juice for sweetness. And if you need it sweeter, you know, add honey or sugar or whatever you like. And just sip that rosemary infused cocoa while you're studying.
Wow.
Yes, sounds amazing. And we also talked, I know when we met Natasha, about how orange peel and citrus peel and the oils that the peel contains also do help increase concentration. So they don't need to buy the essential oil, but if you have some peel, if you peel an orange and then you put it near you and you squeeze it or you let it dry, that helps a lot as well. And then you could have your drink with some blueberries and a snack of walnuts. And that's what you need for your brain to function properly.
Now, walnuts look like brains, don't they?
They do.
They do.
And there have been studies that show that they influence. They have the good fat that helps the brain, yes. But of course, you and I, Julia, know of the Greek mountain tea, which is Sideritis. And there have been studies on this herb that grows in Greece in high altitude, but in other places, in Bulgaria, in Turkey as well. And there are studies against dementia that show that probably helps against dementia. So it's a very nice drink. It's anti-inflammatory and immune boosting. So there's so many things that nature has given us to use.
There is, and my impression is that there's just so much knowledge about it, really, all these different things. And it's quite local, the knowledge, but that we can use it quite simply, really. We don't have to go and buy loads of new things. It's just using the combinations.
Yeah.
And herbs as well, Natasha. I know your next book will be a bit more on those things. Is there anything you can tell us about that or a recipe?
Not yet, but I will in short time. Again, a very exciting study, and I so enjoy discovering these things, and I'm going to look up the Greek mountain tea. Thank you, Dr. Laney. That the earth has, we have beautiful ingredients available to us that have always been here, and it's exciting to discover them and utilize them in delicious and nutritious and comforting ways.
Yes, right now, elderberries. We are getting the elderberries so we can start making some syrup, Julia, for the winter.
Delicious. I made 10 jars last year and they went within like 3 weeks. The girls were putting it on their cereal.
Yeah.
We'll be a bit more careful this year. It's delicious. Like you say, so many things. And so what next, Natasha? Is the passion for the unusual and combining? Will you just see where it takes you? Do you see yourself staying in this world?
I love it. It gives me great joy. I love learning. I love researching, studying, and then sharing with others. Very excitedly so. And very much enjoy creating recipes that often the ingredients don't look quite as if they go together, but they do. and to surprise my tasters with a combination of ingredients that are healthful, flavorful, and unusual is a great joy.
And thinking about harmony as well, and that there's always the good and the bad, and then something comes together, and that the god of war and the god of love got together and they had harmony, and that, you know, there's always the two sides, or that you have to have some fight to get some love, or I don't know, that's how the world is maybe.
Yes, Hippocrates said that cooking is like making music. You can't make nice music just with one note, the same way you can't make nice food just with one flavor. If it's just sweet ingredients, it's boring. So as you said, you need to put a bit of salt in your strawberries, and then you need to bring the sour taste of a bit of lemon. So you need combinations, different combinations of tastes and textures to create something that add colors, something that is interesting and harmonious and interesting for the tongue, first of all.
Yes, at 100%. I also feel that a successful dish and creating a dish utilizes all of our senses, and in a way, a method of how I come up with new ideas. I look through a lot of cookbooks. I look through a lot of gardening books and pages and ingredients. I also look at sunsets and gain inspiration from that, and then create something, smelling it first, smelling ingredients or smelling the combination of ingredients, and then the taste, and then hearing actually plays a part. The crunch of something, the crackle, or the sound when you taste something unctuous, like a cauliflower that's been pureed with garlic and herbs, and just that sensation that you actually hear in your mouth. And so all of your senses, that the touch, eating with your hands, there's something I'm reading about, studying about eating with the hands and how that gives a satisfaction, taking the pita bread or eating with the fingers, and that sensation adds to the harmony and the well-being of enjoying the food.
Yes. And maybe just before we finish on that, more generally on well-being, so it's not just the content of the food, what the food is, but like you say, how you eat it. And so is there other things that make you feel healthy or well when you're eating food, around the environment or the company?
Yes. Eating with others makes the food taste better, as opposed to sitting in a room on your own or eating in a hurry just because you need to get something in your stomach. That's key. You tend to eat less if you're with others, for the most part. I know there are exceptions. I can think of football teams that all the members of the football team will just wolf everything down. But the conversation, music can be very beneficial to enjoying a delicious meal, to savor the moment, the tastes. Lighting is wonderful, from sunshine, from being out in the sunshine under an umbrella, to candlelight in the evening. To take that time to put your fork down between bites fills you up faster, so that you don't overeat, but you become satiated, as opposed to just clearing the plate.
I can't add much more than that. I think being with people you enjoy their company can help so much, makes me happy, and makes eating the food better. Eating out in nature, one of my best memories is having a meal with my husband in Romania, in Transylvania, when it was sunset and we were outside on a beautiful bench. And it was all simple, but it was so organic in a way. We could see a horse in the distance, and there was the tablecloth had a folklore covering, and the water tasted different. Everything tasted different because it was, and we were relaxed. We were on holiday. So being relaxed and not eating food in a hurry and under pressure makes the food digest better, I think, and taste better. So environment is key, and company of others.
100% agree with that. I can visualize, as we all can, moments outdoors, picnic bench, or sitting on a cloth on the ground, listening to the birds, all of those sensations, smelling the fresh mown grass in the distant field, all of that adds to the joy of it and the relaxed time to cherish those moments that stay with you, as yours has from those years ago.
Precious, precious moments. Thank you so much, both. There's much, much more to explore, and there may be more. But thank you, Eleni, and thank you so much, Natasha, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.